So I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by Maha Alusi, and we're going to be talking about her particular project, which is the Sport of Dialogue today. Maha, welcome to this summit. It's really, really great to have you here.
I'm very happy to be here.
Good. Let's start off by getting to know a bit about you. Like, who are you? What's your background and what brought you to coaching?
So my journey into life started in Baghdad, Iraq. I was born there in the capital and had a very privileged life. So from a very growing society there, it was growth in its in the when I was born in the 60s. And then this wealth was diminishing with a war. It was threatened with a war. And I was 18 when my father decided that we go to London. And that's when we all left there, left Iraq. We started life, so to speak, anew. I was introduced to the international society there, fell in love with it, with how mixed people from different backgrounds, London. And there I met my husband. I was in Berlin when I was 25 years of age. We moved together. My husband is German. We have two children, and there I started, so I studied architecture in London, and I started my first business, an architectural office in London for a couple of years, and then I got very much into the internet. When the internet was starting, I was very fascinated by it. I had my, in the year 2000, my second company, which is an internet company, and then after that, it didn't go well. We failed after
many dot coms back in 2000.
I failed, but I didn't realize that it was a success because it opened for me many worlds. Mm. Well, business world.
Yeah.
My last business was this Alusi candles, innovation in candles. I got patent worldwide, and the business I worked with an investor. It's now worldwide. It's in my name, Alusi. So I sold it last year. Throughout it growing, I realized that my inclination is not the material world. I love humans. I really am more fascinated about the differences between us and how we could bridge it, because that was the story of my life, always bridging this multicultural and trying to understand. So throughout my last years of the business, when the refugees came to Germany in 2015, I indulged volunteer work, trying to soothe the situation, trying to bridge the communication. I did a couple of projects which that were like trying to establish a connection between the refugees and the locals. And that's where my work continued later on, because meanwhile, as a business owner, I was involved in teaching startups, mentoring them to build their businesses, which got me involved with international programs from Germany, but teaching Northern Africa, Middle East. And I was very good at that because it is things that I understand business-wise and culturally. And that led me into also being involved in this Start Hope at Home, a program which was constructed by a social organization here to help refugees when they're returning back to their home to build their own businesses. All of that gave me I'm an expert in refugees and migrants, so to speak.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you about that. So it would be very easy to assume that you got involved, and we'll look at your project shortly and get more detail on it, but it would be very easy to assume that you got involved in refugees and migrants because you left Iraq when you did, etc. Is that the case, or was it more that where you were in Berlin, you were seeing a situation that demanded your attention regardless of your own personal background?
I gave a TED talk. I gave two TEDx talks. My second one, it was all about why I got so much involved. You see, as I told you, when I grew up in Iraq, my father and his colleagues were building the country. And they build a big part of the country of Iraq, I am proud to say. Mm. But when the war happened, those human beings, when we were in London, many of those families left Iraq. Many of those families, and my father included, were broken. They lost everything they had. And I was young, I was 19 years in London, and I kept on looking at my father and saying, but why don't you engage in my life here? It is beautiful. And he couldn't, and I couldn't help him. I was young. And when I saw the refugees and I saw how broken they were, it was my chance to do the help that I thought I could do then, but I had more tools, and that's why I did it.
Well, that's great. So let's look at the work you're doing, and if you can, I mean, I know there are various threads to it, and there's been a kind of trajectory of development, but if you could kind of wrap it in a nutshell, how would you describe the sport of dialogue?
We cannot communicate to each other with the language on its own. We need to be able to be opened to the differences. Everybody is different, and there's no one human being. There are no two people similar. And what I saw all throughout, that people assume that when they are communicating with each other, they assume things. And that had led to many misunderstandings. And also, you see, no matter what, all of those refugees, the one thing that unites them is that they were all in a surrounding that was local. They were not exposed to multinationalities yet. Mm. So that means they are not equipped with the tool of the communication. We need to judge, we need to not judge each other from our backgrounds. Who's right? Who's wrong? What am I getting from you? Also, no interest, because the real interest is us being here together. And so that was how I realized I was creating a difference by introducing this non-judgmental, this pleasure of being there in the moment, regardless what had happened to us, what our traumas were. And I managed to influence a lot of people with this attitude, looking to the future.
Yeah, that's great. So when you talk about this idea that the migrants hadn't been exposed to international cultures, are you saying, at least as I understand you, you're saying that there, within a given culture, there's a lot that's taken for granted, so that the language can sit on top of that to express meaning, but underneath that there are shared assumptions, shared beliefs and shared values that don't need to be talked about because they're taken for granted. But when you suddenly transplant that, that suddenly needs to be either spoken about or at least understood. Is that kind of where you're going with this?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we don't need to look at the migrants. Let's look at the English language. We're all speaking English. But I was recently in a webinar, an Indian man talking about to a group of African people, some of my coaches in the business world. And I was in the webinar when I realized if I would not interfere, then the whole conversation will go into a different direction. So I just asked some questions. And then he was able to redirect his input, and people were encouraged to have the conversation. That is the thing. If we are trained, then we feel confident that our questions matter, and also what we are listening to is probably not what we are understanding.
Yeah. So I love the idea now. We've understood your impetus, your personal desire to make a difference, and then you've seen the opportunity. As in, well, I say seeing the opportunity, it sounds like you're waiting for it to happen. But nonetheless, things were happening in Germany that you became like, oof, I have something to do here. What was it you actually did? Like, what was the structure you were building? What was the intervention you were making?
Well, now looking back at those 5-6 years now, I look at it and I say, whoa, am I great? But actually, Nick, it wasn't that. It was not that at all. It was, I just jumped. I was going into those refugee homes that were put as an emergency. They were put into gyms, 200 beds, one next to each other, families from different backgrounds, you know, families who thought that those other people basically are enemies. The media told them that you are enemies. The Muslims to the Christians, the Afghani to the Arabs, and all in one room, and, you know, with no privacy, personal privacy whatsoever. So what I did was I went to those sports halls every evening. It's like 5 minutes away from where I live. And I realized that it wasn't the language. Yes, I could translate English, Arabic, German. I'm multilingual, but it was not about the language. It was about the communication. So very soon after like 3-4 weeks, and I saw how the German government was offering language courses like crazy. Everybody, all the good people, let's say, who wanted to help, were giving lessons, teaching them to speak the language so that we communicate. They spoke, some of them really, like it was no words. And so my first intuition was saying, okay, I could, from within my capability, bring people together, the locals to the refugees. I would translate, but how do I attract them? So instead of the sport halls, I said, let's go to my atelier. I have a crazy atelier because I'm also an artist. And it was all like with a dome made out of wax and floor made out of wax. So I created a round where I could take up to 40 people. And I started inviting them to leave those halls and be in a space. And I invited my friends because the locals had no access to the refugees. The refugees were strangers in those halls. They feared them. To be honest, I understand that because they had no access to them. So what I did was inviting my friends, and it was spreading and using music. I met a woman, an opera singer. Our first attempt for this thing, we did it in the sport hall. We were singing Christmas songs for them, translating them in Arabic, in Afghani, in Urdu. And we noticed how powerful was the language of your music. You didn't need a lot. And so we sat down and we created this program where people meet. We did that for nearly 2 years, once a week, every week. It was not easy, but it was so rewarding because people were able to speak. And I wanted that it's not about our traumas, it's about us being together and how beautiful that is. I made a small video out of it. It's all in the internet. But I noticed as well that the locals were able to communicate. Yes, I was facilitating all the time. And then I had many people who learned my facilitation and volunteers who came in, and we were enabling us present every week to understand who each other. I called it strangers will be friends. And throughout the years, I must say, even though this program went on for only 2 years, but the community continued. And it included many expats, by the way, not only refugees. Many music lovers. We had live performances from opera singers through this co-founder of mine. People who heard of us because we were a little bit in the press, and those who attended, you know how the social media, and we were being visited, especially in Berlin, for our program. I mean, that was rewarding. It changed the lives of those who participated, because They were faster in learning the language. They were faster to be integrated. They got people who helped them around. So, yes, that was the reward there.
That's really great to hear. And I'm wondering, because you said it lasted 2 years, to what extent are you able to see the impact it made in the longer term? Or was it hard to kind of see that long-term impact?
When I was within it?
No, when you look back now, for instance, are you able to kind of see the impact?
Yes. Yes, that's why the sport of dialogue for me is a very important. This is my new project, which I'm working on. We talk about that later. But the impact is that human beings who I knew were sad, were bitter, were judgmental, they judged everything they saw around them. They judged the Westerners from the eyes of a society they used to live in, what the media gave them. Those very human beings are today, I call them the ambassadors of peace. And they were amazing. They are still amazing. I always use them to, when I am involved in a difficult situation, and I do continue those sports of dialogues in my own because people know me now. Now I am known for this kind of a peacemaker. And whenever there's a need, I would invite those people in order for us to create this. It's a testimonial for it that it works. So they bring their stories and they become mentors for those people. Yeah.
Well, it must be amazing to see the impact that has. I mean, I can imagine from a pure human level, it must be very touching to be able to see that happening.
Yeah, I must say, I had a vision. In my TEDx talk, Moments of Happiness, I was within the corporate world known for my attitude towards business, which looks different from the entrepreneurs. And although they rejected it, but they invited me to, I was one of the first speakers in the TEDx Berlin. And throughout the time, these happy moments theory of mine is that we could create happy moments no matter what difficulties we are in. This has led to me being also, and also my fame as this business and art in the Arab world. So I got a lot of messages from the Arabs. And they saying, please look at the war here. Can you help us? So I wrote an email to Angela Merkel, and that I received an answer. That was before 2015. It was May 2015. And I said, I have managed only from the distance through my smartphone to create peace because I years of work that was before 2015.
I'm just going to interrupt you for a second. Because I lost you for about, you were talking about the email from Angela, and then it cut out completely, you froze. So, and then you were saying you wrote to her, so perhaps you could just recap to that if you would.
So I wrote to Angela Merkel, I said, we don't need an army, we don't need to solve their problems, we only need to teach them to love again. And I was suggesting for her that we do kind of I didn't know coaching as such. I said, we need to do for them programs where we teach them how to love from a distance, from the smartphone. My proof of concept is that I managed alone, Maha, to care for a couple of people. And I have records in that. And I said, let us sit together and talk about it. And I... How naive I was. I received an email from the office of Angela Merkel. We really appreciate how you are approaching this, and we will kind of keep you in our records. And you can imagine that Angela Merkel doesn't have the time for a cup of coffee for everybody.
I think she should have found it for you, Maha.
But she responded. Yeah. I wrote to her another email because only in August, the doors were open and so many people were coming so that I could give them this philosophy or this teaching in order for them to connect to their families back home.
Yeah. Now, I'm aware that during that phase of your first project, you then had to do crowdfunding. Could you talk us through that? Because I think one of the big challenges within the world of social impact coaching is this issue of funding. And there are many ways of getting around that. But I'm curious, how did you go about it? And what was the funding for? And how did it go?
Right. At that moment, my investor from my business, I was doing well. And I had the time because in the investment, we decided that I pay myself a salary and we grow the business. But my investor was going through difficulties and he decided to cut down on things until things get better. So I had no funding anymore. And the space of my atelier needed to be, you know, I was paying rent. I was paying also for everything that was little bits and things, coffees and teas and cookies and whatever when people were there. But meanwhile, I had a record. I mean, the press was writing about us. There were so many people involved who witnessed me doing that. And I never asked for money there and then. I never thought about it. I didn't do it because I was able to. I had the luxury to be able to do it. But then everybody was so reliant on this program and I had to keep on the office, or it was the atelier, and it was a luxury. So we talked about it and then we decided, okay, let's do a crowdfunding campaign. We decided we should, I mean, we calculated a couple of months rent and all of those little expenses. It wasn't much. I mean, we didn't want more than 7,000 euro. We got 8,600. Mm, and it was only those individuals. I mean, some of them were the refugees themselves, by the way.
Mm. Yeah. Well, congratulations, because crowdfunding can be very hit and miss. So it's great you achieved what you needed to. So let's, if I may, Maha, let's look at the role of coaching in this. You've talked about facilitation as being your sort of the strength of what you were doing. But we're looking here at coaching for social impact. And I'm curious on what are the qualities or the skills of coaching that you've taken and used within this kind of work? How does that begin to show up?
I am so happy I joined Animals, Nick. I am so happy that I did the investment. And one of the reasons why I did it was not because I knew what coaching is. It was materialistic. Let me just tell you the pure truth. When my business was no longer giving me the money and I was making progress within the coaching world, because there were social programs who took me for my experience organization, and I started becoming a business coach for refugees. It was going very well, but also some of those organizations were requiring a certification. So I thought, I'm not going to rely on my reputation on its own. When other programs, it's called, you apply applications for it, I would apply for...
You're back. You froze again. I don't know whether it's my side or your side.
I'm looking at my net. How does it say? What does it say? I don't know. It says it's on everything.
Yeah. Likewise. But I think it's Zoom. Sometimes it's because Zoom collapses sometimes. So you said it was materialistic because you need to get certification. So what you needed, like an ICF or something, some kind of official certification. But it sounds like what you're saying is that actually you got much more than that. That's the impression I'm hearing.
I am so grateful because all of a sudden, everything that I was doing intuitionally was written in books. It was there in the, it's there in the coaching world. Listen, ask questions, don't judge. All of a sudden, everything made sense for me. And I was like thinking, whoa, this is a rich material which should be accessible to everybody. And I had a problem. I had a dilemma. I was discussing it with Marcus. I say, well, what are we going to do? We are privileged. We can pay this amount of money. But what about people who need it, who really need it? But the product is not there. How could you create a training program that is not expensive, that is accessible for those who desperately need it? Yes, we talk about coaching for social purpose, but that's not what I was searching for. And here is what I was, I indulged in the history of coaching, in the expansion of coaching, and how it is, what's the future of all of those, and what is the ICF, what are the organizations who are holding such beautiful practice and translating it. And I only saw this translation in a product for coaches, for training programs, the certifications. And then I thought, well, maybe I should start it. And when I started approaching the ICF, I wrote a couple of emails and actually I approached, I don't know if you know about Alexander Osterwalder, this guy who really innovated the business world. It's the business world, how to create new businesses, innovation where nobody else knows them. How do you become, they call those people disruptive people who come up with something out of the blue. And it's a long way, but they teach and he, just before our meeting, we were accepted in two master classes, me and another guy who was working with me, also a migrant, on this sport of dialogue, which basically is, it's like how to create a new product with other people which is a need, and how to test it, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. So,
well, congratulations. You've been accepted. Yes. Masterclass.
Yes. I applied to them the sport of dialogue and they were very interested. And yeah.
So as I hear it, what you're saying is that, and I agree with you, by the way, that the risk of something like coaching for social impact is that it's coaching done to someone or done to somewhere or embedded in something or whatever it might be. And what it sounds like you're saying is you want to take coaching skills and make them much more widely understood and part of culture in a sense. Is that what you're saying?
I am saying exactly that. Hmm. But I am not discrediting the work, the amazing wealth we have in the number of coaches who are graduating and who are practicing. Mm. I think we need them. I think we need, in order for the sport of dialogue to thrive, we need coaches.
Mm. It's interesting. It almost makes me think of, this is a really weird analogy, so excuse me, but I'm thinking of coronavirus and the idea of herd immunity. And it almost feels like you need to get to a level of, like, well, the opposite of immunity is herd infection of the coaching gene.
Yes.
Until that becomes the norm.
Yes, yes, yes. I believe, but this is my fantasy. I think it is not enough for us to learn a second language in order for us to communicate. Mm. All of those people, I see them. I mean, we have here in Germany, in Berlin, in my surrounding, so many nationalities speaking German, communicating with each other with the German language. And I don't believe that they are actually communicating. They're speaking, but not communicating. Another very, very present issue right now is that the problems of such a multinational culture is that the problems that are arising, they are only accessible through those grassroots. You need to be able to talk to them. They need to be able to talk to the top in order for the solutions to be found. The top will not find the solution for them. So, but they are not equipped. And so often I am invited to be the communicator, but I don't need to be there. Every individual will be able to do that. It's a long training. I think it could not happen in one day. It's not a 1 month or two. It's a continuous training. That's why I call it the sport of dialogue. I think it's similar to yoga. You need to keep on doing it in order for you to be
I was going to ask you about the sport of dialogue, that particular phrase, because when I first saw your project and I saw the title, I assumed there would be sport in it, but of course there isn't. And I was like, I wonder what this sport is. And then you think, okay, so sport, typically it's a game, it has rules, it has end goals, et cetera, et cetera. So there are things that define it as a sport. So, but for you, it sounds like sport means an ongoing discipline of improvement and practice.
Yes.
Got it.
I saw the similarity in the coaching world. Just like the accreditation, coaches cannot be coaches if they are not on the continuous practice. And that's why my similarities, that's why I don't want to go away from the ICF and all of the already established. In every detail, we could take from that, but translate it to a new product.
Yeah, I understand. I totally understand it. There's a desire for dialogue to be the basis of communication, which hence the sport of dialogue, rather than coaching per se, which is in a sense, it's a manifestation of a quality of dialogue. And I think you can have coaching without being a coach. That's essentially what we're saying. Yeah. So this is interesting. It's kind of taken the conversation in a different direction than I was expecting, which is great, because at one level, I thought we would be talking about the projects you did, starting with the singing. And the music and so on. But it sounds to me like that's led you to a place where you've gone, whoa, there's a much bigger thing that needs to take place. And I'm at least a part of that happening. So I'm curious on what is the mindset that you either have or needed to develop to take on such a big, bold vision of changing the way not just coaches get trained, but people in general learn to have dialogue. What can you speak to, like, what have you got to believe about yourself or the world or something that enables you to kind of take that on?
I am 54 years of age and I have done a lot. I don't need anything and I have nothing to lose. I either invest in my belief of a vision of a world that is harmonious and do whatever it takes for me to reach it. And I know there are so many people who are like me. And in the coaching world, it's full of those people, because coaching, no matter what, it changes people, no matter how people approach it to, it's a career, it's a way of earning money. The training changes those humans who took it into another awareness and level. So I am well protected from failures, I say, because I will find people who listen to me. And I have nothing to lose, except that I am thinking that the first step is for me to express it, to make the steps, to approach you, Nick. I wrote you an email in February. I wanted to discuss this with you. I am writing emails left, right, and center. I know that one day we will together, not on my own. I will not be able to achieve anything on my own, but I am capable of, I believe in the collective creativity and thinking. And that's why I think we together will manage somehow, some way.
Yeah, there's something very nice about this idea that this might not apply to everyone, but something about you don't have anything to lose. I mean, ultimately, this isn't going to go backwards. You can only make an impact. So then the question is, how big an impact? So I'm wondering on the basis of that, let's get practical. Let's think about this. What do you perceive some of the challenges might be to you? Because it's one thing to have the idea, to have the vision. It's another to start making it happen strategically, tactically, operationally. What do you perceive are some of the first steps that you might begin to take?
Well, many people think that those programs need to be financed. I don't think about the finance. I believe on creating a viable product. I really believe in continuing what I am doing as much as I can in the many versions that are offered to me. And I'm already doing that. I am in so many circles. I don't disregard anybody, any suggestion. I go and indulge and create whatever with those people, what they're creating. That's why many of those initiatives that I am working with are inputting for me to develop this further. Number two, I have, just like how I got the crowdfunding going so easily, I have so many people who believe in me because they know I am doing it because it drives me for harmony. My biggest project is world peace, but that's another issue. But people know me, and those who worked with me are also being ambassadors. So we are growing. And we are the ones who have tasted the value of it. So those multi-layers of people on several parts of the system, they are gonna be, when the moment comes to concrete it into, okay, who's gonna fund it? I mean, I'm getting funds left, right, and center, just because of the reputation on its own. So I don't know. I really don't know. I know that whatever I'm doing, with every little decision I am making, it's moving me forward. And if I didn't do it in my lifespan, other people would do it.
Yeah, that's very interesting. It sounds to me, I resonate with this very strongly, actually, is that actually just by taking action consistently, you begin to move forward. But you don't necessarily need a super well thought out strategy that takes you from A to Z. You've just got to get moving. Because I think a lot of people might get frozen in taking action around something big because they feel they've got to have it all planned out. But you're saying, no, do what you can right now. And then just move yourself slowly forward, and it begins to pick up its own momentum.
Sure. And the more you experience things, I mean, I was approached by one of my mentees from the Start Hope at Home, a young guy from Uganda. I don't stop when the programs of coaching stop. I mean, I'm paid for certain hours. I don't stop, generally speaking. So he approached me, he's from Uganda, and he wanted to do, after the epidemic, the shutdown for the healthcare in Africa, and a hackathon. We have been working so hard, the two of us, and the team has expanded. It's global, the team, to enable this people coming from Africa to come up with ideas, joining with people from Europe. This, and the result, it's just finished, 30th of August. I have been exposed to people within Africa. I've been mentoring them. And I see ideas beyond our imagination. People know, they know what's good for them, but they don't have a voice. And the sport of dialogue would enable people to come together regardless what we need. It's just we are exercising a sport. And the more, so the thrill in it is, let's get together and let's exercise how we could communicate. And that's enough.
Yeah, very nice. Well, it's been a real pleasure talking to you, Maha. Is there anything else you want to share about the journey that I haven't asked about? I just want to be sure that there's any lessons or outcomes or anything that you feel like would be interesting to discuss?
I think that there is one dream that all of us human unites us. We all want that everywhere peace and people living in peace and harmony. And that no war is happening nowhere else. And it's not that us here in the wealth of security and wealth of money that we are privileged to be hosting refugees and taking care of them. So I think if the sport of dialogue thrives, then hopefully we all live in peace.
Thank you, Maha. That's great.